welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The U.S. Navy apologizes for that fag bombshell. Germany seeks gay Nazi victims to compensate. And bias is on the ballot in Texas and Michigan. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 20th, 2001. The U.S. Navy has issued a rare apology to the nation's gays and lesbians. Last week, the Associated Press distributed a photo of a bomb earmarked for Afghanistan, which clearly showed graffiti reading, "Hijack this, fags," sparking protest from gay and lesbian groups in the U.S. and Britain. This week, Rear Admiral Stephen Pietro Paoli wrote a letter to the Human Rights Campaign, the largest gay and lesbian group in the U.S., with a handwritten postscript, "Appreciate your help in letting folks know our regret on this." Describing the graffiti as an inappropriate comment, he wrote that Navy leaders understood and shared HRC's concern about it. When the photo came to their attention, he said, "We immediately notified Navy commanders to ensure steps were taken to prevent a recurrence of this unfortunate incident. They have done so." He went on to say that the U.S. Navy does not tolerate discrimination of any kind and described the graffiti as an isolated incident. He also wrote that there is no written Defense Department guidance governing spontaneous acts of penmanship by our fighting forces, although the Navy expects oversight and leadership on the scene to ensure such actions are appropriate.
California's Domestic Partnership Registry will confer about a dozen significant legal rights after January 1st, thanks to Democratic Governor Gray Davis's signature this past week. Although California's new law is far narrower than Vermont's civil unions, activists note that it was adopted entirely through the political process, without the lawsuits and judicial rulings that forced recognition of gay and lesbian couples by state lawmakers in Vermont and Hawaii. Hawaii's pioneering reciprocal beneficiaries law has since expired. Davis, who last year vetoed three much less sweeping domestic partner bills, signed this one saying, "This bill is about responsibility, respect, and most of all, family, and it's about time." He acted despite intense lobbying against the measure by California's religious right. Those opponents included many of the groups which succeeded in amending the state constitution to restrict marriage to heterosexual couples with a landslide popular vote last year.
The California bill by San Francisco's openly lesbian Democratic State Assembly member Carol Migden recognizes registered partners as equivalent to legally married spouses with respect to a number of issues relating to death and disability, standing to sue for wrongful death and negligent infliction of emotional distress, standing to make medical and financial decisions for an incapacitated partner, including filing for state disability benefits, the right to use sick leave to care for an ailing partner or partner's child, and the right to use the state's standard will for bequests and to administer a partner's estate. Domestic partner health benefits will no longer be taxed as income by the state, as they are by the federal government. State unemployment benefits will be available to those who lose their jobs when relocating with a partner. Very significantly, registered partners will be able to adopt their partner's biological children through the same simple expedited process by which married spouses become legal step-parents. California's domestic partner registry is open to same-gender couples of all ages, but only to those unmarried heterosexual couples over age 62.
And while the California law will ease step-parent adoptions, it was revealed this week that a Delaware court has authorized that state's first adoption of an unrelated child by both members of a gay male couple. In fact, the court granted the couple adoption of two brothers in June, but the unusual written opinion in the confidential proceedings was only published this week. One member of the couple, who have been together for more than 20 years, had adopted one boy in 1999 and his brother in 2000, and the other partner then applied to become a second legal parent to both. The legal representative appointed for the boys said the men provided them with a loving and a stable environment, and the judge wrote that the fact that the men are gay in and of itself is of no concern to the court. The boys, age 6 and 1, had been labeled difficult to place because they were born both premature and cocaine addicted, but they have thrived in the gay couple's care.
In Canada, four lesbian co-parents are suing the province of Manitoba to legally co-adopt their partner's biological children. Although Manitoba granted gay and lesbian couples equal standing under 10 provincial laws earlier this year, adoption rights were among 70 other discriminatory laws set aside for further study. The lesbian couples are hoping they can spur faster action by the provincial government without having to go through a lengthy court action. Legislation is not likely to come for several months, but Manitoba's Justice Minister Gord McIntosh has said he'll ask his legal review committee to deliver their report before its planned December completion.
Finland's Supreme Court this week awarded custody of two children to their non-biological lesbian co-parent rather than their biological father in the wake of their lesbian mother's death. The High Court's ruling overturned lower court rulings and marked its first award of custody to someone with no blood relation in preference to blood kin. The children, aged 12 and 14, had been living with their mother and her partner since 1993 and wanted to remain with the partner. Their father has been living outside Finland through those years, and the court said the children could not be forced to join him against their wishes. A spokesperson for the High Court said the ruling reflected the children's wishes rather than their stepmother's sexual orientation. While the Finnish gay and lesbian group SITA agreed, they also believe it reflects a change in public attitudes, saying that a decade ago, no lesbian co-parent would have even tried to contest the father's custody. Finland's parliament enacted legal registered partnerships only last month.
Czech gays and lesbians and their supporters turned out 400 strong last week to demonstrate for partnership rights. The colorful gathering in Prague's Náměstí Míru Square included the government's human rights commissioner and a leading social democrat, as well as several celebrities. The Czech parliament will soon be debating the government's bill to create registered partnerships.
Australia's transsexuals are celebrating a landmark legal decision affirming the validity of a marriage between a trans man and a woman. Although the trans man, known as Kevin, had obtained a revised birth certificate a year before his wedding to Jennifer, Australia's Attorney General disputed the birth certificate and claimed the marriage was illegal because Kevin was not considered a male at birth. But Sydney Family Court Justice Richard Chisholm upheld the marriage, maintaining that contemporary thinking about gender should override guidelines based on 30-year-old British precedent. Kevin has been living as a male for 7 years and underwent sex reassignment surgery 3 years ago, although without having male organs constructed. He and Jennifer already have one child with medical assistance and are beginning treatment for another.
Back in the U.S., transgenders are protected by Massachusetts civil rights law, the state's Commission Against Discrimination has decided. Although neither the state law nor the legislature has yet dealt explicitly with the question, the commission has the authority to interpret and apply the civil rights law, and in two decisions last week, it accepted transgender discrimination complaints for investigation.
In Florida, Broward County's civil rights protections for gays and lesbians appear to have escaped a voter challenge for the second time. The group Equal Rights, Not Special Rights had sought to place a repeal initiative on a special ballot and had apparently turned in more than the number of signatures required. But civil rights supporters in the group Empower Broward challenged the validity of the signatures, and an official review threw out more than 12,000 of them, according to unofficial reports this week. That would leave the petition's nearly 8,000 signatures short of the minimum to qualify the repeal measure. Repeal advocates say they'll examine the rejected signatures and vow to continue their efforts.
And finally, New York City's Republican Mayor Rudy Giuliani gave New York City one of the strongest domestic partnership ordinances in the U.S., and he stood firmly behind the gay and lesbian victims and survivors of the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center. In fact, he's gone way beyond the call of duty to support them. He's agreed to make a drag appearance on the Showtime cable TV series Queer as Folk. That fundraising idea came from one member of the gay couple he's roomed with since moving out of the mayor's mansion in the course of his divorce. And Giuliani responded, "If it means more money for relief funds, sure." The group Empire State Pride Agenda has raised almost all of the targeted $200,000 to put Giuliani on the show. Queer as Folk producers are said to be excited at the prospect, and a script will be developed to include the mayor's drag cameo without him having to visit Toronto for the filming. We hope the Queer as Folk staff will do a better job of outfitting the mayor than he had for his 1997 drag debut at a local press dinner. That pink dress just wasn't right for him.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending October 20th, 2001, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Greg Gordon. This just in. Openly gay interim Berlin mayor Klaus Wowereit was elected to a full term on October 21st by a landslide with about 30% of the vote. Wowereit, a social democrat, became mayor in June when his conservative predecessor was ousted by the social democrats, greens, and ex-communists. He came out shortly before getting his party's nomination for the interim post when a leading newspaper was about to take the matter out of his hands. Wowereit called his election by the voters at large a signal that Berlin is a tolerant city, an international city, and it doesn't matter which skin color or religion or life orientation a person has. Local elections are also coming up in the U.S., and in Michigan and Texas, lesbian and gay rights and the opposition to them are in the spotlight. We'll hear from activists waging those campaigns, but first, there's more news out of Germany. It was a milestone when the German government agreed to add gay victims of Nazi persecution to the list of minorities eligible for compensation. But now there's a major obstacle standing in the way of the distribution of those funds. As This Way Out's Lucia Chappell reports, officials are appealing to the international gay and lesbian community for help.
The problem is finding gay Holocaust survivors. That's why the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, the group that administers the Swiss bank and German compensation programs, is launching a global information campaign to solicit the support of gay and lesbian organizations. At an October 16th press conference, IOM's Director of Compensation Programs, Dirk de Winter, called for international community networking to help get the information to the people who need it.
Let me begin by IOM's responsibilities under the Holocaust Victim Assets Program. IOM is, under that program, one of the implementing organizations, together with the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany and with the Claims Resolution Tribunal. Under this settlement, IOM is in particular responsible to compensate non-Jewish persons who were persecuted by the Nazi regime. And the Holocaust Victim Assets Program focuses in particular on groups, minority groups, that were targeted by the Nazi regime. That is, in the case of IOM, Roma, Jehovah's Witnesses, physically or mentally handicapped people, and homosexual victims. Let me briefly list those homosexual victims who can be compensated, who can file a claim with IOM under the Holocaust Victim Assets Program. First of all, homosexuals who performed slave labor for German companies or for the Nazi regime. Secondly, homosexual victims who were denied entry into Switzerland or were mistreated there as refugees. And there is a partial list of names posted on the internet. And thirdly, homosexuals, as any other victims, who performed slave labor for certain Swiss companies and their affiliates. Extending this briefly to another compensation program IOM is an implementing partner for, which is the German Forced Labor Compensation Program. And I stress that this is a different program, but some of the claimants or the victims can apply to IOM for both programs. For the German Forced Labor Compensation Program can be compensated by or through IOM homosexuals who were detained in a concentration camp, homosexuals who were deported to Germany or to German-occupied territory and were subjected to forced labor and were held under extremely harsh living conditions, homosexuals who suffered medical experiments or severe health damage in connection with Nazi wrongs, homosexuals who suffered property loss with the direct participation of German industry, and not as a result of military activities. Those are the victims, again, specified to the category of homosexuals that can file a claim with IOM under the German Forced Labor Compensation Program. The filing deadline for both these programs expires on the 31st of December 2001. Heirs are only entitled to claim if the victim died on or after the 16th of February 1999. And if a homosexual victim who filed a claim dies, the heirs have 6 months to assert their rights with IOM, 6 months after the death of the victim. Now I come to my last point, or my appeal, as I called it. Tens of thousands of homosexuals have been sentenced to imprisonment by the Nazi regime for their sexual orientation, and several thousands have been sent to concentration camps. Only few of those homosexual inmates of concentration camps have survived. The purpose of this press conference is precisely to reach those survivors and to encourage them to file a claim with IOM. We realize that they might be hard to locate, but through the information campaign, we want to reach out and to reach individuals in a targeted way. And we hope that this press conference will have a snowball effect. We hope that gay and lesbian associations will help us in disseminating information. We have that kind of cooperation with other groups of victims, with other minority groups, and we are very much looking forward to that kind of cooperation. Of course, I'm speaking here in Berlin, but again, I hope that this will reach worldwide, and countries such as the United States, Canada, Australia, but also European countries, the Netherlands, the Scandinavian countries, the UK. In those countries, IOM feels it is very important that this message goes out to homosexual victims of the Nazi regime.
That was International Organization for Migration Director of Compensation Programs Dirk De Winter. IOM officials believe that there may only be about 100 surviving gay Nazi victims. They note that gay slave and forced laborers suffered the harshest treatment and had the highest death rate, about 60%. Those who survived the war were still considered criminals under the law and hardly able to be open about the reason for their incarceration by the Nazis. And, of course, any gay victims who are still alive today would be quite advanced in years. Again, the deadline for filing claims is December 31st. For more information, contact the International Organization for Migration in Geneva, Switzerland, or visit their website at www.iom.int. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Lesba-gay rights are being challenged on the ballot this November 6th in four U.S. cities, Houston, Texas, and in Huntington Woods, Kalamazoo, and Traverse City, Michigan. The stakes are high, according to local activists who addressed the press this week in a teleconference arranged by the National Gay and Lesbian Lobbying Group, the Human Rights Campaign.
My name is Grant Martin. I'm the campaign manager for the No on City Prop 2 campaign. It's a joint effort of People for a Fair Houston and Progressive Voters in Action, which is usually known by its acronym PVA. The ballot measure that we're facing would amend our city charter, which is kind of like amending the Constitution, to forbid city council and the mayor from ever passing domestic partner health benefits. This was put on the ballot through a petition drive by an organization called Houstonians for Family Values, which is run by a pretty extreme far right wing nut by the name of Dave Wilson. And interestingly enough, Dave Wilson is so extreme that our sort of establishment Republicans have dissociated themselves from him. They're not taking a position either way on this. In part, that's because he, has been advocating that gay and lesbian people be quarantined to an island where they can all die out of AIDS. He's passing out a book named now at senior centers and churches called Answers to the Gay Deception, which is the first time I've seen it, but it's put out by a Dallas company called International Christian Media, and it's essentially a rehash of the Gay Agenda videotapes from the last decade. Our polling indicates that if we can do enough mass voter communication and turn out our base, that we have a shot at defeating this thing.
My name is Mary Cooper, and I am the campaign manager for Huntington Woods. Our group is called FAIR of Huntington Woods. The acronym is Fair and Informed Residents. Our community is very small. We have 4,800 voters. We are, in terms of our location in the Detroit metropolitan area, we are on the southeast end of Oakland County. Our initiative is essentially to get a yes vote to pass the Elliot Larson Human Civil Rights Act with the same language that the state of Michigan has, with the exception of adding sexual orientation to the ordinance. We originally had our city commission pass it on a unanimous vote, and then, of course, the American Family Association came in with paid petitioners and had the initiative placed on the ballot or rescinded. Our city commission decided to place it on the ballot. Our surrounding communities, Royal Oak and Ferndale, also had similar ballot initiatives last year that were defeated, and so we're kind of like the next domino, more or less, here. We've tied it to a Do the Right Thing campaign and essentially have addressed the concerns that the community has about why are the ordinances coming up for a vote anyway. How did the American Family get in to force this to the ballot? It's a kind of an outsider versus insider fight. And here it's resonating. It did not resonate in Royal Oak, and I don't believe it resonated in Ferndale.
My name is Robert Dempsey. I'm the campaign manager for Kalamazoo Against Discrimination. In Kalamazoo, about a year and a half ago, the city manager extended same-sex DP benefits to city employees, and that brought in the American Families Association, headed by Gary Glenn here in the state. What they're trying to do now is pass an amendment to the city charter, which would prevent the city legislature from ever passing any legislation to extend legal protection to members of the gay and lesbian community. We're trying to appeal to people's basic sense of fairness and common sense in trying to defeat this proposal and to not change the city charter.
I'm Paul Heaton, co-chair of the Traverse City Campaign Against Discrimination. We have an identical question to Kalamazoo on our ballot. It is an amendment to our city charter that would prevent any protections based on, actually it's homosexual, lesbian, and bisexual orientation is their wording, which is a little bizarre. So they are specifically singling out gay people. It's not a sexual orientation question. And our message, too, is say no to discrimination. The outsider issue is very strong up here because it's clear that this is a downstate group that is trying to do this. My perspective is that we do not have three individual campaigns here. What we have is one man in Midland who is trying to build a political machine, a statewide political machine, on the backs of gay people. And he's doing that one city at a time. Right now he's in Huntington Woods, Traverse City, and Kalamazoo, and he's going to Ypsilanti next and some others.
This is Beth Beshert. I'm the president of Michigan Equality, which is a statewide political organization working to end discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. We have an organization in the state that's able to institute a cookie-cutter approach in any local community very easily. They find a local person that's willing to put their name to a registered organization, distribute petitions. They have money. They have backing at the national level. And they've picked Michigan for their particular message. We believe that the problem here is not going to end with three local ballot initiatives, that this is going to escalate, and that we hope that after two consecutive losses, that this November 6th we're going to see success on our side, and we're going to be able to demonstrate that this might not be so profitable a subject matter for the organization that's targeting our community to continue to pursue.
Seth Kilborn, National Field Director for the Human Rights Campaign. I completely agree with what Beth just said, that I think the American Family Association is using GLBT issues in Michigan as a tool, I think, to activate the extreme conservative vote in Michigan, because Michigan is such a battleground state politically and electorally. As we expect these efforts to lead throughout Michigan, I think we, from a national perspective, also see a danger of them spreading to other states. Already, looking into 2002, we most likely will be dealing with a referenda in Maryland to repeal the anti-discrimination law that the legislature just passed and the governor just signed. And then in Maine, more than likely, we'll be looking at an initiative to repeal not only the state domestic partner benefits for state employees, but also any individual cities in Maine who have passed such programs. It would repeal all of those. You'll notice in these initiatives, two of them in Michigan and the one in Houston, we're not just talking about repealing existing law, we're also talking about preventing the city decision makers from ever enacting similar laws in the future, which I think is a very important point.
This is Mary Cooper in Huntington Woods. In our city, people have been much more direct in their correlation between the activities of the religious right who are working in opposition to the human rights ordinance and the activities of the Taliban. Our community made a very quick connection between the opponents of the human rights ordinance and these particular issues that are currently in the minds of everybody in this country. However, that doesn't preclude the fact that people are still afraid of the images and the dehumanizing of the gay community, which seems to be the MO of the opposition everywhere, it sounds like. That if you create a fearful enough image, no matter how much of it is a lie, it seems to stick.
This is Paul in Traverse City, and in Traverse City regards to September 11th, what we see is what I would describe as a quiet resolve, that because of all those events, people feel it's more important to defeat this, if for no other reason to give us a sense of hope that, you know, we're not going to let the bad guys get us again. And it's, I think when we win on November 6th, it's going to be a somewhat cathartic moment for us, just because people are looking for something good.
You've been listening to excerpts from a telephonic press conference featuring queer activists involved in election campaigns in Houston, Texas, and in Huntington Woods, Kalamazoo, and Traverse City, Michigan. All four cities will vote on their lesbian and gay rights ballot measures on November 6th, and This Way Out will, of course, bring you those results. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Chris Ambage, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's perilous financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WDFH Ossining, New York, 4ZZZ Brisbane, Queensland, KFAI Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this local community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.